14. They returned to Philip's shop. Philip gave Martin instructions on how to properly sand and varnish his staff. Step 1, don't make the obvious joke. And left Martin in the front room while he sat down at the crystal ball, typing furiously and mumbling to himself. Martin objected to using varnish in such an enclosed space, but Philip said he couldn't very well do it on the street, and besides, the horrible odor of the varnish would add to the ambience. Martin found that with a little effort, the head of the staff fit nicely into the bottom of the hollow bust of Santo. The fit was snug enough that the bust would probably stay on the staff all by itself, but Martin threw some glue in for good measure. Martin also sawed off the bottom end of the staff, partly to make a flat base, and partly because Philip was adamant that the staff had to be 5 feet tall, not including the ornamentation at the top. Philip was still staring into the crystal ball, muttering things and sporadically typing on the Commodore 64's concealed keyboard when Martin entered an hour later.
My new staff is drying. What next?
Philip didn't look up from the crystal ball.
Have a seat. We're ready for the good part.
How's the temperature in here, Martin? Comfortable?
It's a little hot and stuffy, but not bad.
Where do you usually put the thermostat in your home?
About 78 degrees. Philip tapped a few keys, looked up at Martin, and theatrically hit enter. Instantly, Martin was cool and comfortable.
Wow,
he said, instinctively looking for a hidden air conditioning vent, though he suspected he wouldn't find one. Philip leaned back in his chair.
We've known about the file for a decade, and we've been developing the shell program nearly as long. All wizards are free to explore the file and develop new shell functions as long as we share what we've found. I believe it's similar to what you'd call open source development.
Martin heard him, but he was still trying to get his head around the implications.
So now it'll always be a comfortable temperature for me in this room?
Close. From now on, you will always be a comfortable temperature everywhere. It doesn't matter if you go to Antarctica or Panama, your body will react like it's 78 degrees with low humidity.
Well, that's about the best thing I've ever heard.
Isn't it? Of course, you can still get burned if you touch something hot, and you're still subject to sunburns. But in general, your sweating days are over. How many languages do you speak?
2-ish. I speak English and I can get by in Spanish.
Well, now you speak all of them.
It turns out that what languages you speak is just another variable in the file.
Near as we can tell, the program hears the words you intend to say and sends the hearer the words they need to hear. As weird as it seems, at the end of the day we are just two lines of code sending each other information.
Martin thought about this.
So really there's only one language.
As far as the file is concerned.
But open and abierto are two different words.
Yes, and if you actively choose to say abierto, only those slated by the file to speak Spanish will understand it. But the file knows that you are saying open.
So if we went over to France, everybody would think I was speaking French?
Yes, and you'd hear them in English. Have you noticed that everyone's accent was thicker last night? That's why.
You monkeyed with my file while I was asleep?
Just a little, to make today easier for you. Next question, how old are you?
23.
I'd ask you if you like being 23, but you wouldn't know. You've never been older than 23. I have, and I'll tell you, physically speaking, it's not going to get any better. It certainly beats being in your late 30s for all eternity.
Philip went back to hammering on his keyboard, then again hit enter with a flourish.
Are you telling me that I'm going to be 23 forever?
Physically, if that's what you want, you'll still develop mentally. If you exercise, you'll get stronger. If you don't, you'll get weaker. You can still get fat or go on a diet, but unless you go back in and edit the file, whatever you become, you'll be a 23-year-old version of it.
Martin opened and closed his mouth a few times before words actually came out.
Are you saying that I'm immortal?
Philip let out a long breath.
Maybe? You still need food, water, and air. We found a way to make you not need those, but we don't suggest using it, even in an emergency, because you still feel like you need food, water, and air. If the only way to survive is to spend even an hour feeling like you're suffocating, I'm not sure death wouldn't be preferable. There was a person, I hesitate to call him a man who did many things we didn't like, and we had to send him back to his own time.
Martin asked, "That was Todd, right?"
"Yes, Todd."
Philip said it like the name was the vilest insult imaginable.
"Anyway," Philip continued, "one of the things he did was create a series of alterations he could make to somebody's file entry that would effectively make them a ghost. You'd be all but invisible, unable to touch anything and unable to talk. All you could feel was hunger, thirst, and panic because you thought you were suffocating. The only thing you could do, and this is the evil bit, was make spooky noises. We still don't know how he did it. You couldn't say a word, but you could go all day. The idea was that the person who was ghosted would psychologically torture his friends and family, trying to ask them for help."
Martin tried to imagine what that would be like, and then he tried desperately to stop.
"You need to eat. You need to drink. You need to breathe,"
Philip continued.
"You can still be killed. You can't be stabbed, beaten to death, or dismembered, but you can still be killed. Starvation, suffocation, drowning, and thirst, those will all still get the job done. But unless someone pulls you out of the shell, impact and puncture wounds won't. If you're not killed, though, yes, you will, in theory, live as long as you want. That's partly why I'm not bothered that I can't travel to the future. If I hang around long enough, I'll get there anyway."
You were able to make your Fiero indestructible, and they were pretty much made of styrofoam. Does that mean us?
"Don't badmouth my Fiero. You're right, though. As long as you have full shell access, it will constantly monitor and update your file, meaning that you can't really be injured by conventional means. The meanest guy in town, or even Gert, can pound on you all day and you won't get a bruise. It'll hurt the whole time, but you won't be permanently injured."
"Cool. Yes, it is. Took us years to figure it out, and a lot of mistakes were made along the way. At first we tried just stopping the decay rate, like on my car. The results were suboptimal. The body just keeps building on itself. Picture the Thing from the Fantastic Four, but instead of having the power of super strength, you have the power to experience constant pain. That brings us to an important point. When exploring the file, we wizards only experiment on inanimate objects and ourselves. We do not experiment on non-wizards. We only experiment on wizards who know what we are doing and give consent, and we never change a person's physical structure.
But I only discovered the file by accidentally making myself taller." Philip's eyes widened.
"How much taller?"
2.5 inches?
"Hell, you lucked out, my friend. Much taller and your spine might have stopped functioning."
"But you said we can't change our physical structure, and I've proved that we can."
"I didn't say that we can't. I said that we don't." "I didn't mean it wasn't possible. I meant that if you do, we'll reset you to your original parameters, cut off your access to the file, and send you back to your time. We don't have a lot of rules, Martin, but we take the ones we do have very seriously. What were they again?"
"Experiment only on ourselves or another wizard, and only if that wizard knows what we're doing, and we don't alter any person's physical structure, ever."
"Well done. Okay, Martin, I think you're ready to say the incantation and start learning to use your powers."
"Incantation?" Martin sneered. "You realize we aren't really doing magic, right? All this smoke and mirrors is great for the locals, but we don't really have to keep it up when we're in private, do we?"
"Yes, we do. Martin, if being a wizard is a mask you remove sometimes, it's only a matter of time before you forget to put it back on. You've got to live it all the time. Think of it as going undercover, if that helps. Also, more important, some of these bits of smoke and mirrors, as you put it, serve important functions. The shell we've written is always running in the background, monitoring the conditions of those we've authorized to use it.
So it'll be spying on me?
You could look at it that way. You could also say that your television remote control is spying on your viewing habits. The shell watches, but it doesn't record. It just waits for certain signals. Then it makes adjustments to your portion of the file based on those signals.
Ah, and those signals are designed to look like spells and incantations.
This thinking thing is slowly becoming a habit. So, if you're fully satisfied, may I please give you magical powers?
Of course, Martin said, chagrined. I'm sorry I interrupted. Please, tell me what to say.
Philip smiled and rose from his seat.
Splendid! Let's get you kitted out.
He moved one of the loose folds of fabric that lined the walls. Behind it, there was a small set of shelves. From them, Philip grabbed a folded bundle of blood-red fabric, which he tossed to Martin.
Yeah, put these on. It's an old Robin hat of mine. They'll do until Gwyn has finished yours.
Martin pulled on the robe. Thanks to Philip's more generous proportions, the robe fit loosely and pooled on the ground around his feet. The hat, which, like the robe, was blood red with black trim, was also too large and rested on his ears and eyebrows. The overall effect made Martin look like a small druid child, dressing in his father's clothes and pretending he was going to a sacrifice, just like Daddy. Philip took a second to admire Martin in his new ensemble.
Marvelous.
Really? I thought I looked ridiculous.
Oh, you do? Marvelously ridiculous.
Philip handed Martin his staff.
Now, hold my staff, and this is very important. Do not make the obvious joke.
Martin took the staff and said nothing.
Good. Are you ready, Martin?
Yes.
Good. Repeat after me. Supren, supren.
Supren, supren.
Subin, subin.
Subin, subin.
Maldextra, dextra, maldextra, dextra.
Maldextra, dextra, maldextra, dextra?
B.A. Komenko.
B.A. Komenko.
Philip clapped.
It is done!
What was that?
Martin asked.
I'm told it's a cheat code from a video game called Contra. That's a bit after my time, I'm afraid.
Martin thought for a moment.
Up, up, down, down, left, right, B.A.
Yeah, start!
Yep, that's totally the Konami code. What language was that, Latin?
No, these are the Middle Ages. There are people you've met here who actually speak Latin. All of our spells are in badly translated Esperanto. It's a universal language that was invented early in the 20th century to foster international peace and understanding. It's perfect for our purposes because there are many resources to translate things into it, and absolutely nobody speaks it.
Nobody in this time.
Nobody in any time. Seriously, William Shatner, and that's about it.
But you said the spells are badly translated.
Yeah,
Philip said, looking a bit embarrassed.
If the spells were in perfectly constructed textbook Esperanto, then we'd have to speak perfect Esperanto. So instead we use Esperanto vocab words, but with a caveman version of English grammar. Anyway, you've said the incantation. The shell is now active for you. To test it, try to move your head so that your hat falls off.
Martin tried, but no matter how he whipped his head, the hat stayed on, despite being too large for his head.
Good,
Philip said.
Now reach up and take it off.
Martin did, and the hat came off easily.
So the shell is keeping my hat on?
Yes. A wind can't blow your hat off. Enemies can't knock it off. If you put your hat on, the only thing that can remove it is you.
Martin was puzzled. That's a nice demo, I guess.
Doesn't seem practical, though, eh? Give me my staff back. I'll show you something.
Philip took his staff back. He reached into his pocket and produced a gold coin, which he sat on the table next to the crystal ball. He held his staff in his left hand. With his right, he pointed at the coin and said,
Levi Objecto!
While still pointing, he raised his hand and the coin floated in the air, staying perfectly aligned with his hand. He lowered the coin back to the table. He motioned to Martin.
Now you try.
Martin pointed at the coin, searched his memory, and said,
Levi Objecto.
He raised his hand. The coin didn't budge.
Did I get the words wrong?
He asked.
No, you remembered the words just fine,
Philip said. He handed the staff back to Martin.
Hold this, put your hat back on, and try again.
Martin put the oversized hat back on his undersized head, held the staff in his left hand, and pointed at the coin with his right, and said,
Levi Obiecto!
He raised his hand, and the coin smoothly lifted into the air. Martin just looked at it for a moment. He raised and lowered his hand, and the coin moved with it. He had seen Philip do the same trick, both with the coin and with that cursed goat, but it hadn't prepared him for the experience of doing it himself. Philip moved to stand beside him.
Push your hand forward, like you're gently shoving the coin away.
Martin did, and the coin slowly glided away from Martin.
Now, pull your hand back like you're pulling on the coin.
He did, and the coin slowly glided back to him.
Make a stop sign with your hand.
Martin did, and the coin sat motionless in the air.
What now? Martin asked.
Have fun,
Philip answered. Martin did just that. At his command, the coin explored every inch of airspace in the room. After a few minutes, Philip asked,
It's pretty much the best thing ever, isn't it?
Yeah, it is,
Martin replied.
You see, I registered you into the shell already, and now it's watching you, waiting for certain words or phrases, cheat codes, if you like. That's what we do. We research, design, and develop new cheat codes, which we share with the other wizards. It wouldn't do to have the codes just be words and phrases, though. If some local heard the Konami code, as you call it, and repeated it, they'd have access to all of the spells, and that would be bad. So in order to use the spells, you need to have said the code. You have to know the commands in Esperanto. You must be wearing a robe with cuffs exactly 2 feet in circumference, and a conical hat no less than 1 foot tall. Also, you must be holding either a wooden staff 5 feet tall, not including ornamentation, or a wooden wand 1.5 feet in length. Get any part of that wrong, and the shell will ignore you.
Martin played with the coin for a few more minutes. Finally, Philip said,
You can levitate things with your hand or with your staff. It just depends which you point at your target when you say the magic words. Let's try something else. Say, copio obiecto.
Martin said it. There was a flash of blue light, and then there were 2 coins.
And that, Philip said, is why we don't have to work for a living.
Philip reached up and snatched one of the coins out of the air.
Now say detrui obiecto, if you please.
Martin did. There was another flash of light, and the coin disappeared.
Where'd it go?
Martin asked.
We didn't go anywhere. It's just gone. It no longer exists. That's the thing about being part of a computer program. The laws of physics no longer apply. Matter can be created or destroyed. That's why we train and screen people before giving them access. If you were to point at a person and say the spell, that person would be irrevocably gone, and everything that person knows, including who had killed them, would be lost.
Philip stretched, yawned, and walked to the door that separated the crystal ballroom from the shop. He stood silhouetted in the door, with his back to Martin.
Yep,
Philip said.
Someone who has access to the shell can go anywhere, do almost anything, and if they kill someone, say the person who gave them the code, who would be the only person who could identify them, they'd be impossible to stop.
Philip stood in the doorway for a long moment.
Mm-hmm,
he continued.
The only person who could identify them would be gone.
Another long moment passed.
And in your case, Martin, that person would be me.
Slowly, Philip twisted around to look over his shoulder at Martin, who was still standing there silently. Philip smiled.
Well done! You've passed the most important test so far! You didn't try to kill me.
People actually do that?
Oh, yeah. Think about it. I've already made you functionally immortal. I've given you the ability to create money. I've shown you enough about flight to figure it out on your own. I've given you a hat, robe, and staff, and made it clear that if you took me out, you wouldn't have to face the trials. Someone who isn't as decent as you might well be tempted to destroy me and get on with their lives.
It didn't even occur to me.
Dumb and decent can often look the same. It's depressing, but the truth often is. It's just as well. You're still in a safety mode. If you had tried to kill me, you'd have been knocked unconscious. And I don't think I need to tell you where, when, and in what state of dress you'd have woken up.
Philip walked back to the hidden keyboard and hit a few keys without bothering to sit down. He squinted into the crystal ball and nodded.
There. The safety's off. And now, where was that thing?
Philip turned his back to Martin and rummaged around in the shelves that were now partially concealed by the drapes. He rummaged for a full 30 seconds, then stood up, faced Martin, and spread his arms wide.
Congratulations! You've passed another test! You didn't kill me even after I explained in detail why you might want to! That clears up the whole dumb or decent question.
Philip went back to the keyboard and hit a few more keys. When he finished, he looked at Martin, who was studying him intently.
Is this another test?
Martin asked.
If you have to ask, then it probably is.